Conservative? You bet. Controversial? Right again. It's time to squabble on the Jim Benson Show.
Hello, and welcome to another edition of the Jim Benson Show, conservative news and commentary addressing the issues that concern you here on the BBS radio and television network. If you're interested in what seems like the never-ending Epstein controversy, you may be getting tired of hearing and seeing current events about it. I'm also tired of it, to a certain extent at least. We have so much other important matters to be dealing with today that I can understand, again, to some extent at least, President Trump's frustration with those of his supporters being so upset and so demanding of nothing less than complete transparency and official investigation of the Epstein file or files and any other information the government has on the alleged sex trafficking, possible espionage, blackmail, and national and international intelligence agencies' involvement, and how all this relates to the deep state or administrative state's shadow government operations. I too want these investigations, but I also want to see the MAGA, I don't want to see the MAGA base torn apart over this and the loss of this important block of the MAGA base, which some of which are threatening to boycott the 2028 midterms, or 2026 midterms, I'm sorry, which could at least hand back control of the government to the very deep state these people so detest and, yes, rightly fear. So today I'm going to run a select few video clips of recent days discussing and exploring the bizarre and mysterious rise of Jeffrey Epstein, his possible links to CIA, Mossad, MI6, his alleged roles in sex trafficking and blackmail operations for the political left and its shadow government, our deep state, and other matters related to the late Jeffrey Epstein. Since so many have been weighing in on this controversy, here's my two cents worth as well. I know many people are upset about the Trump administration shutting down their inquiries into the Epstein case, and of course this is coming from Trump himself. It's no use blaming underlings like Pam Bondi and Kash Patel. And I am also concerned about this matter being covered up, if possible, if that's what's happening, or, you know, being shunted to the side. And I want complete transparency and official inquiry. But it's also important that Trump and the MAGA base of supporters don't tear themselves apart over this. Nobody ever gets everything they want in politics. Debated controversy over the Epstein matter, like the Kennedy assassination and other controversies of modern American history, will likely go on forever, and we will likely never know all the facts and truth of the situation. I personally believe it's entirely possible that the imprisoned Epstein did kill himself. The question is why? And all this concern about a missing minute of video surveillance tape on Epstein's jail cell is just speculation, like all the rest of the things that are being brought up about it. It seems strange to think that within that one missing minute, someone could have slipped into Epstein's cell, violently killed him, and slipped out all under 1 minute and without being detected. As I said, we will likely never know the whole truth, but I believe it's entirely possible to suffocate yourself and violently damage your throat area in the process. Additionally, as U.S. Attorney General Pam Bondi has stated, what the Trump DOJ and FBI recovered, which is likely recovered from the Epstein evidence, is primarily child pornography, which, if true, is likely illegal to make public, and Bondi has stated it will not be. Another thing I found interesting is that reportedly 2 days before his death, in what appears to have been a final FU, so to speak, to the people after him, Epstein reportedly put his personal assets, more than $500 million worth of money, into a trust. I think it was an offshore trust. And Epstein's accusers seeking compensation have not been able to access this money, at least at this point, that's what I understand. I don't know if Epstein was in fact a billionaire or just controlled as much money for clients or supporters or whoever, but as I recall, his personal assets at the time of his death amounted, in this trust, amounted to over $500 million. It appears to me that this was a man working to settle up his affairs as he was intending to end his own life. If Epstein did in fact kill himself, did he do so under duress? Was he set up to do so, to appease and protect powerful people? As I said, we will likely never know. And also, think about this. The deep state's own bad actors have had custody and complete control over all the government's files and evidence of the Epstein case for years, including the several months between when Trump was elected last November to his taking office in January 2025. Don't you think these people sanitized, removed, and/or destroyed anything in that evidence they didn't want the public to see? So it is possible the so-called Epstein file that Bam Bondi and Cash Patel obtained does not contain any incriminating material, or at least incriminating material that would affect the deep state's own allies and operatives. It all goes on, and I don't want to be obsessed with it. As I said, the Trump administration and our nation as a whole have a lot of important things to deal with now besides the never-ending Epstein matter. So without further ado, let's begin with today's videos. Four of the five videos today deal with the Epstein matter, and will be played back-to-back. The fifth video I'll discuss after playing these clips. Our first video today is from the YouTube channel Liberty Vault and covers part of a recent podcast show by conservative commentator Candace Owens discussing the mysterious rise to power and wealth of Jeffrey Epstein. The second video is from a recent podcast on YouTube of the channel Redacted, titled Where Are the Epstein Files? And discussing yet more bizarre and mysterious details surrounding Epstein's activities. We'll then play recent commentary by Alex Jones about the Epstein controversy and what he sees as a major blunder by the Trump administration's handling of it. Lastly, we'll show a few minutes from a recent Turley Talks YouTube podcast show in which commentator Dr. Steve Turley, who has also been highly critical of the Trump administration's handling of the Epstein evidence, forecasts that Trump will eventually make at least more of the Epstein evidence public. Who knows where all this is going? The latest, as of this broadcast, I've seen is that Trump posted on his Truth Social website that he no longer wants the support of his followers who are still upset and demanding over the Epstein matter. But I looked after I saw the post publicized on the Alex Jones show and couldn't find it on Truth Social. So perhaps it was taken down? Only time will tell how all this will play out.
Yes, obviously, the entire world knows that Jeffrey Epstein was their asset. He was working for them, obviously, okay?
So recently, Candace Owens had a podcast about Jeffrey Epstein and his background, the truth about it, why it's so hidden, and why no one wants to cover it, and who he was actually working for. So let's get Candace's take on this. Please like the video and subscribe to the channel.
So I'm going to slow everything down for you so you can truly appreciate how absurd this story is. First and foremost, and this is my favorite part of the Jeffrey Epstein story, is that he is a man who became a billionaire. And the strangest part about his billionaire status is that nobody knows how he became a billionaire. Yeah, they can't tell us that. That's my favorite part of the whole thing, is just like Chris, my editor, mentioned earlier, you don't pay 8 cents of tax money. And they'll be like, right here, my friends, you shorted the government 8 cents, but Jeffrey Epstein, we don't know where he got his billions of dollars. The real story actually begins with a man named Donald Barr. Okay, Donald Barr. And if you're listening to that right now and thinking, Candace, that surname sounds strangely familiar to you, well, it is because he is, in fact, Bill Barr's father. Bill Barr, who worked for the CIA and then became the U.S. Attorney General under George H.W. Bush, and then again under Donald Trump's first term. Yeah, that Bill Barr. His dad was Donald Barr. And his dad was actually a pretty interesting character, I got to tell you, because he published this book in 1973, a science fiction book. I want to be clear, it's fiction. And it was entitled Space Relations. And this totally fiction book told the story about a planet that is ruled by oligarchs who engage in child sex slavery. wow, that is really weird. Per Wikipedia, they write, quote, it has been noted that the plot of the novel anticipates the crimes of Epstein and his accomplice, Ghislaine Maxwell. And even more interesting, by the way, is that this planet that is engaging in this child sex trafficking is known as the COSARS. Let me spell that for you. K-O-S-S-A-R. Not to be confused with KSARS. But I did decide to look into the word COSAR, K-O-S-S-A-R. And it does, you know, it actually is a surname from Eastern European Slavic area. But don't let that let you get caught up here, okay?
Yeah, this is interesting. I haven't actually heard this bar connection, so I'm interested to see what she says about that. But I will say about what she said originally that, you know, no one knows how Epstein became a billionaire. That's absolutely true. It is known how he acquired large sums of his money, though, and large sums of his fortune, because he worked for Lex Wexner as a tax specialist. So this billionaire, for some reason, hires this guy essentially off the street. He didn't have a major Wall Street background. He apparently was in Wall Street for a while. He was actually a failed math teacher that got dismissed because it seems like he liked to hang out with the students. But he got dismissed from that, and then he was picked up by Les Wexner, of all people, rich billionaire. Connections to the Israeli government, by the way. And he made his fortune by owning Victoria's Secret, and the parent company of Victoria's Secret also owned many other companies. He gave several hundred millions of dollars to Epstein, presumably because he helped him so much on his taxes in ways that, you know, no one else could have helped him with. And this is just such a weird story and explains part of it, but we don't even have the full explanation for all of it.
Anyways, in this intergalactic plot, there is this group of people who are political extremists, and they are ruled by oligarchs, and they settle this colony in the middle of nowhere because they're political extremists. And they're actually, it says on Wikipedia, they are bored because they just have so much power, such absolute power. They never get in trouble for anything. They can do whatever they want, these COSARS, and they're bored with their power, and they have an ambassador that's helping them to be welcomed back into the wider empire, because the wider empire is actually not down with their slave-owning society. They don't allow them to kidnap human beings and to trade them. That's so strange, right? Very interesting story that Barr was, it's a totally fictional story that he was telling. Vice actually read the book by a journalist named Becky Ferreira, and she describes the novel as highly unsettling due to its depiction of rape of enslaved people, particularly teenage girls, and other coercive sex acts. The sex acts described are performed, quote, for the dual purposes of entertainment and controlled procreation. And she views the novel as sexualizing minors and fetishizing rape. That seems really weird. But Daddy Barr, wrote this book.
Well, interesting. I want to see how this connects to Epstein or Bill Barr, actually, and I'm sure she'll explain that. But, you know, this is a fictional tale, but there are seemingly a lot of things that are reminiscent from what we've experienced the last few years with the Epstein story, isn't there? And that's only come to light even more in recent days when the Trump administration, when the DOJ and FBI released that memo saying that, one, there's no evidence that a client list exists, despite the fact that Pam Bondi's on film saying that it was on her desk just months ago, and that there's no evidence that he killed himself, of course.
I got to tell you something else about him, because it's quite interesting, because it does end up being a lot of what Jeffrey Epstein was accused of and was taking place, was actually doing. At the time that his book was published, even more interestingly, Donnie Barr was the headmaster of a school. Wow, could you imagine sending your kid to the school and then this guy publishes this book about child sex exploitation? Anyways, he was the headmaster of a school called the Dalton School in New York. And while he was the headmaster, a young Jeffrey Epstein was selected to become a math teacher at this school. Jeffrey Epstein, by the way, was just 21 at the time. Donnie Barr is the headmaster. Jeffrey Epstein becomes a math teacher. And I got to tell you why that's weird. First and foremost, because Jeffrey Epstein only had a high school degree. He didn't have any teaching certifications. He had dropped out of this mathematics program at NYU. Yet under Donald Barr's stewardship, while he's writing this book on the side, Jeffrey Epstein is plucked from obscurity to teach at one of the most prestigious schools in Manhattan. So prestigious, by the way, that today, okay, tuition is $65,000 per year. By the way, I should tell you, Barr himself was a bit controversial. He actually made several unconventional hires at this school during his tenure. And soon after Jeffrey was hired as a teacher, he had to resign amid some controversy.
Yeah, I mean, that's interesting. I actually have a background in education. My degree is in education. I've never officially worked in that capacity, but I can tell you, at least today, I can't speak to back then. It's highly restrictive about licensing, about acquiring a teacher's license in almost every state. And that being like the bare minimum prerequisite to becoming a teacher. So yeah, that's unconventional. A lot of unconventional things happen the rest of his life that don't really explain how he made such a fortune, but I'm glad she's covering this too.
I'm not going to get down that rabbit hole for you, but yeah, he's an interesting character. And you are probably not going to be shocked, but while Epstein was there as a teacher, he was inappropriate with the young female students. He attended parties with them.
Shocker. We'll
talk about this in the future. Anyways, this unqualified, or at least underqualified, creepy Epstein, who only had a high school diploma, then magically gets a job in finance. Again, zero qualifications. He just somehow became friends with the CEO of Bear Stearns. So in 1976, he joins this firm as a low-level junior assistant to a trader. Because again, he doesn't have any qualifications. So he's just assisting, not even the executive assistant, the junior assistant to a trader. But magically, you guys, you're not going to believe me. Just 4 years later, that junior assistant, Jeffrey Epstein, became a partner of the firm. I kid you not. He was made a partner of the firm at the age of 27 with zero financial background. It's giving Emmanuel Macron. It's giving like someone more powerful is just kind of pulling me up through the ranks and I'm allowed to do that for whatever reason. I don't know. That's just I'm getting a vibe here.
Yeah, absolutely. In three distinct circumstances, not only being plucked out of obscurity to be a teacher and now to be part of this hedge fund that he was part of on Wall Street as a junior trader without certifications. I don't know what existed back then, but, you know, Sigma 7 certifications are necessary for, you know, financial advisors for the most part. And there's other certifications that are required for that. Again, different time. And then later, he's plucked up out of obscurity by Les Wexner. I can never say the name. Les Wexner. Out of obscurity. To do his taxes, and then that's why he got hundreds of millions of dollars. None of this makes sense unless there was some connection to intelligence services. It just, the paper trail does not comport to reality in terms of how these things work. There's no explanation really for this happening outside of, you know, what they call conspiracy theorists and what they say.
Just sounds very familiar to me. Anyways, just 1 year later, he actually had to leave that firm, even though he just made partner, because he was found guilty of an SEC violation. So partook in a little bit of fraud, very quickly had to resign. But it's all good because then he just started his own consulting firm, because obviously he's super qualified to do that, to start consulting for billionaires and governments, because that's what he did. He establishes like Epstein and Co. at the age of 28, and he begins consulting for governments and extremely wealthy clients. Some of those clients, by the way, who have embezzled funds from people. I'll give you just one example. This guy, Steven Hoffenberg, hired Epstein in 1987 as a consultant for his Towers Financial Corporation. And while Jeffrey Epstein was consulting for Towers Financial Corporation, they happened to take part in the largest Ponzi scheme ever recorded until Bernie Madoff came some years later.
All right. Well, why are the Epstein files being stonewalled? It's the $800 million question, right? Does it have anything to do with the planes that were borrowed but not owned by Jeffrey Epstein, perhaps? So let's pull some strands a little bit here on this. Representative James Comer yesterday, and of course, Representative Luna, losing their patience, at least outwardly it appears they're losing their patience, from Pam Bondi, Kash Patel, the powers that be that are keeping these files? They're maybe not even at the DOJ anymore. Like, what's going on here? Why don't we have these Epstein files? Why don't we have the videos? Why don't we have the tape recordings? Why don't we have the flight logs? President Trump issued an executive order on all of this. What's taking so long? Could it have anything to do with the FAA flight logs of Epstein's plane? And I put plane in air quotes because we might be completely misunderstanding what the term Lolita Express actually means. In other words, we're told that Jeffrey Epstein had a Boeing 727 that was known as the Lolita Express. He also had a few other planes as well. But Lolita Express could actually be a term, a metaphor, really, to describe the service that he'd provide rather than the airplane itself. He would provide this to high-profile business leaders. Take a flight, have some cocktails, enjoy yourself, indulge your fantasies with some underage girls. Epstein didn't just use his own airplanes, it turns out. He borrowed planes. Who did he borrow them from? I'd like to know. As Tina Brown wrote, there's nothing more corrupting than flying private. Want to understand the motives of our mercenary elite? Take a trip on a private plane, Tina writes. There's nothing more corrupting than flying private. Who's flying you holds all the power, the leverage. How many of these flights resulted in awful things happening? Were there people on board who didn't do anything wrong at all, but who were doing a favor? Maybe they were just doing business deals, doing business with Bill Clinton in order to put pharmaceuticals in Haiti through the Clinton Foundation. Jeffrey Epstein, etc. Who owned these airplanes? Mel Kay is the host of the Mel Kay Show, author of Americans Anonymous, Restoring Power to the People, One Citizen at a Time, and she's going to help us maybe pull the strands on all of this. She's been doing excellent reporting on this. Mel, welcome back to the show. Great to see you.
Oh, great to see you. Thanks for having me. Very frustrating watching this unfold, I know.
Yeah. So what do you make of this? You see the frustration from like James Comer, Representative Luna, but then we don't get anything. We get a few trickles of things, but we're not getting any answers. Why do you think we're not getting answers?
Well, frankly, from what I have learned and what I've known, and I've been digging into this since the 2008 case, is this goes to the highest levels of the financial system. I believe that this is completely connected to the global financial system, the one created by Bretton Woods, that includes the IMF, the World Bank. Don't forget, Jeffrey Epstein was a member of the Council of Foreign Relations, a member of the Trilateral Commission, a member of the Rockefeller Institute. He had an office at Harvard for years. He was funding Harvard and MIT. He also had banks all over the place. But I firmly believe that a lot is being hidden from the American people that they need to know, particularly about J.P. Morgan Chase and their $365 million settlement with the victims. Now, how can there be a $365 million settlement with the victims, and yet there are no people that these girls were trafficked to, girls and little children, I believe boys as well? This is much bigger when you connect the dots also to Les Wexner, who, you know, Jeffrey Epstein would use the dangling carrot of working for Victoria's Secret, Wexner's company. He, of course, was Jeffrey Epstein's main client. He sold him his house, $77 million house in Manhattan. He also owned Abercrombie & Fitch, and the guy that ran Abercrombie & Fitch is in jail now for trafficking young men. So we have multiple multinational corporations involved in this, and I believe multinational banks. And so while people want to hear the salacious stuff about celebrities and socialites and princes, the people that control this world right now are the international banking cartel, as I call them, the World Economic Forum types, which was something he did. He went to the Edge Foundation, the billionaire dinners. Epstein was everywhere that power was. And at the end of the day, great wealth and power can have this kind of effect.
So does it, can I say this then? Is it possible that some of these people had no idea, or they were just along for the ride? They thought they were doing business deals. They're on these flights, and So in a lot of these different flight logs, because I want to know what these international flights, I want to see these flight logs. We've only seen some as a result of the lawsuit, but not the full amount here. We don't know whose planes were borrowed, used as a buddy system, sort of, you know, like, oh, borrow my plane. Take my plane. It's not just my Jeffrey Epstein plane, but I'm borrowing it from this billionaire to fly Bill Clinton down to Haiti to send pharmaceuticals through the Clinton Foundation. So are there people, do you believe, that are innocent, caught up in this, whose lives could be totally ruined, but it's incredibly difficult for the DOJ to kind of sift through it because they don't know what was happening on these flights while they were airborne.
Well, that's true. I also want to mention, because nobody ever mentions it, that one way that people got to Jeffrey Epstein's islands were their yachts. So there was plenty of travel to Epstein Island via ports of call and yachts and ships. On top of that, many people flew into St. Thomas. They flew into St. Martin and then would take boats or helicopters to the island. So that's one part of this. But the other part is just 2 weeks ago, Jess Staley, who was the head of private banking at J.P. Morgan Chase and a very close friend of Jeffrey Epstein, who was implicated. And there are very, very sketchy emails between him and Jeffrey Epstein that came out. Well, he was the head of private banking at Chase for, 10 years. Then he was at Barclays. So you got these big banks involved, too. And like I said, Chase made a settlement for all of the transactions, but they also made a settlement because of Staley. And he was just in court in trying to get his license back in London, wasn't covered by our press at all. He's somebody that has a lot of questions. A bunch of emails came out between him and Epstein where he was at his island or he was at his compound in New Mexico. So you got that guy. Then you have multiple other people at J.P. Morgan, who flagged Epstein's accounts since 2006, but nobody ever put together a suspicious activity report, which is very odd. And none of the queries into what he was doing were ever followed through on. So that's an issue as well. We also know that beyond that, there were multiple other banks that came into it. And then we have the whole situation with Harvard. It's inexplicable. First of all, Summers was a good friend of Jeffrey Epstein. We have pictures of him with him. We have all kinds of information. Why did Jeffrey Epstein have an office at Harvard for 20 years? He didn't go to Harvard. So you have the Harvard connection. And then on top of that, number one in his book happened to be Tom Pritzker, who's the brother of Governor Pritzker, also Penny Pritzker, who was very big in the Obama administration and I believe is on the board of governors right now of Harvard. He, too, came up and many people, victims, named him. So what you have is all these huge financial people. And then another one, Dubin, came up many times. He was with Highbridge Capital. Staley was involved with Epstein and Highbridge and a deal that went through there that made J.P. Morgan a lot of money. But it was found out that Highbridge was also asked about trafficking young women and girls on their private jet from Florida to Epstein in New York. We also know that have not gotten much information on the white collar crimes here. There are tremendous financial crimes that happened here. And instead, they just signed off on some big transfer of wealth to the victims without any further investigation. And I do want to mention there was also a bank that Jeffrey Epstein owned called Southern Country International that renewed its licenses after Epstein died, which is odd. And on top of that, which a lot of people might not know, is Denise George in the U.S. Virgin Islands was the prosecutor that went after and got the $105 million settlement from the estate, the settlements from J.P. Morgan and another bank. Well, oddly enough, she was the prosecutor that was going after all these cases. She was about to file another case against J.P. Morgan that would disclose more of the people that were involved on the other side that were either paid or paying, because $40,000, $50,000 are going out to trafficking victims regularly. And J.P. Morgan turned a blind eye. But what we should also know about that entire situation is that President Biden went down to, so JP Morgan, she filed the last case on December 27th. Within a few days, President Biden goes down to the U.S. Virgin Islands, meets with the governor, and she is fired 3 days later. So there's a lot with the Epstein case that is still open and should be looked into, particularly that that woman, Denise George, was working very hard getting these settlements. Our president goes down and kind of reminds you of what happened with Ukraine and the Council of Foreign Relations when he said, fire the prosecutor or you're not getting the $1 billion. Well, it just so happens Joe Biden goes down as Denise George files her last case. And 3 days later, she's fired. So, I mean, this goes to the very top of protecting somebody, and that somebody is likely the international banking system.
So what is the Trump administration doing then? Because Pam Bondi comes on Fox News all the time and says, well, we're almost there, but this. Every single day, it's like, yes, we're getting close, but this, but then this. I mean, I don't think she's trying to hoodwink us. Do you think when she took this job, it seems like she did want to give us this information? So who is thwarting this? It can't be that the Trump administration thought that they could kick this can down the road forever and we would forget.
Well, we have to remember, one, Acosta in his first term, I've always believed that he put Acosta in there because he was the attorney that gave Jeffrey Epstein in the first case a so-called sweetheart deal. He barely went to jail, as far as I'm told. But frankly, he got charged in that with one count, I believe, of having sex with an underage prostitute, which is the crime there is rape of a child, but that's not what he got. And Acosta, you know, said he made bad judgment, but his excuse was, or his reasoning was, that he was told to back off because Epstein was part of Intel. Then on top of that, when they raided the New York City home and they went into the safes there, not only did they take hard drives and many binders and CD-ROMs and diamonds and passports, but apparently nobody seems to know where any of that went. They also, the day he was arrested, raided the island. At that point, he had already filled in. He had cement trucks there filling in underground bunkers on that island already. There was a fire on that island, and nobody knows where anything that they seized there went. We know that he had closed circuit TVs in every room, in every corner, and that was a big part of it. And frankly, I think that this is an international ring that includes not only trafficking of children and women, but also of guns and drugs. And I always remind people that he claimed in the first trial that he was one of the founders of the Clinton Global Initiative. The Clinton Global Initiative was supposedly founded by the Clintons, Jeffrey Epstein, and Stephen Bing. If you recall, he was a big producer in Hollywood. Stephen Bing committed suicide jumping off a roof in Century City during COVID. Jeffrey Epstein is now dead, and there's still questions about his interplay at the Clinton Global Initiative. But if you'll recall, the Clinton Global Initiative also launched something called the Island Challenge, or the 10 Island Challenge, that went right by Haiti, right by all of the main human trafficking hubs of the world. Branson was a part of it too, his island. So there's all these different pieces that really go to the highest level, not just of banking, but of international finance, that also has to do with ports and you know, and with, you know, he was involved with Iran-Contra all the way back there. He was a part of moving Air America from MENA, Arkansas to Ohio, where Les Wexner is. So there's just these very, very powerful players, these big banks that were included. J.P. Morgan never got in trouble for the 2008 consolidation, I believe a controlled demolition of banking to consolidate. And now we're dealing with a lot of people that have decades of crime on their hands. And I would say this, that I know about banking because my husband ran a bank, is that they know who's on the other end of these transactions. You don't settle for $375 million and have no line of exactly where the transactions went and to whom. We're not talking about blockchain transactions.
Well, one of the areas I've been diving into this quite a bit of a rabbit hole is Barry Sherman. Barry Sherman and his wife, Honey Sherman, in their 70s, their mid-70s, the billionaires, friends of the Clintons, and they're up in there in Toronto. They wind up dead, hanging by belts in their lavish Toronto home. Their bags were packed. They were ready for a trip. Bill Clinton was seen at their house regularly in a black SUV, regularly at their house. Hey, make a lot of money sending drugs to Haiti through the Clinton Foundation. You're a drug leader here in Canada, and these guys wind up dead. It was all very coincidental that Jeff Sessions was, of course, looking into Jeffrey Epstein at the time. Would these people have implicated the Clintons and their associations with Jeffrey Epstein? Is one of his aircraft to blame for being part of this Lolita Express, Barry Sherman's airplane? So there's a lot of questions about this. They still haven't solved this case. Right. But two of them hung, husband and wife, relationships to the Clintons, relationships to the Clinton Global Initiative, the Clinton Foundation. And how, you know, what relationship did they have to Jeffrey Epstein and all of this? But they go quietly into the night, just like Virginia Giuffre just now goes quietly into the night suddenly after being hit by a bus and now out of it. So all of these witnesses keep disappearing mysteriously.
The Shermans is a very odd case. And then you remember the Rambaxi fake AIDS debacle with the Clintons as well. I believe that company, that was an India company that was teamed up with the Clinton AIDS Initiative. They got charged, I think, $500 million dollars for putting out fake AIDS drugs. And you recall that Jeffrey Epstein flew with Chris Tucker and Bill Clinton and Kevin Spacey to Africa to do an entire Clinton AIDS Initiative event for a month. There's that. There's also Ron Burkle has been suggested to have his plane also be involved in this situation. So these are all the richest of the richest people in this very high level Wall Street kind of venture capital circle in New York City and all over the world, frankly. And then there's also, you know, there's the modeling agent that I believe ran Elite, but he was Jean-Luc Brunel. He also was arrested in this case for trafficking, I believe, 9-year-old twins and other women to Jeffrey Epstein over the years. He was found dead in his cell in France, and many people still don't know that Jeffrey Epstein also had a house in Paris, and claimed to have a house also in England. And as for the planes, there was a lot of questions about DynCorp at the time and the tail numbers on his planes being switched, and certainly there was more than one plane, and the shell company that apparently he had many shell companies, but one of the shell companies, is basically a P.O. box. So, I mean, there is a level of financial criminality here that is, I think, even bigger than anything else. And that, I believe this has a lot to do with the international banking system that has been looting our country through USAID and other ways for all these years. And I think Jeffrey Epstein was right in the middle of that.
I think you're absolutely right. I will get you out of here on this, Mel, which is what James O'Keefe is supposed to be reporting this afternoon. Alex Jones, I guess, spoke to James O'Keefe, got a sort of a hint as to what this is going to be. And he says, will James O'Keefe's highly anticipated expose reveal that it's Attorney General Pam Bondi is the Trump administration official responsible for covering up the Jeffrey Epstein file? So Alex is putting that out there. I don't know if that's what's going to be in this report specifically. What do you make of that? Do you think it's AG Bondi stonewalling this?
Well, what you have to remember, first of all, most of the original police I'd met with, I knew one of them that passed away from Palm Beach because my parents lived down there. But I have to tell you, she was an attorney general in Florida during a lot of this Epstein case, also during the Zimmerman case, which kicked off the entire BLM thing that was actually a straight up self-defense case. And she allowed Eric Holder to turn it into a civil rights case with a special prosecutor. So I don't know what's going to come out about her. But like I've said many times, I wish that she would have been asked about either of these cases in her confirmation hearings. And she wasn't. And as much as I'm a fan and I love Donald Trump, I know he's very close friends with Pam Bondi. But both of those cases should have been questioned in the hearings, and neither one came up. And I thought that was very odd that nobody asked about the Zimmerman reopening of that case that really did kick off Black Lives Matter and the entire movement. And then, two, she was around during the entire 2008 investigation in Florida and straight through. So I don't know what's coming out about that. All I know is that there are people that have a lot of money and power, and I believe that there are the global banking people that are suppressing this. Now, who they got to and how and why is the question. And, of course, he ran a giant international blackmail ring that I believe he took over from Robert Maxwell, Ghislaine Maxwell's father. So, you know, we have multiple layers here, but that people like Les Wexner, Jess Staley, Bill Clinton, the Pritzker brother, that none of these people have even been interviewed by the FBI or the Southern District of New York should infuriate everyone. And I also believe that Comey's daughter being on the entire Epstein case here and there with all we've learned about Comey is a conflict. So again, it's the Southern District of New York. We still never got the Anthony Weiner laptop that apparently had crimes against children in an insurance file. That disappeared. A lot of those cops are dead. And now we have the same situation here. And Bill Barr promised us that he would look into it. And then we find out this whole past of Bill Barr. So this is a long-term cover-up. And it goes back, honestly, I think, to Iran-Contra. That's how long I think Epstein was involved here.
Goodness.
Wow, my God. It's such a disgusting onion. The more you peel it, the stinkier it gets. It's unbelievable. Someone asked in the chat, do we here on the show have suicidal tendencies picking on Bill Clinton right now? We're going to wind up with unbelievable.
No, but if I had slowed down what you just said and mapped it on the board behind me, it would be one of those things with red straight, like the meme, right?
Yeah.
But that's reality.
Yeah,
I've done it. It's crazy. And I'm telling you, it goes into the modeling fashion world. It goes into the highest levels of banking. It goes into weapons and gun trafficking. I mean, it is gigantic. And that's why I've always said Epstein would bring down the entire house of cards of those that have looted and stolen our birthright and our country from beneath us. The highest, most powerful people in this country are the people that are involved in this.
Yeah, that's why it's being kept silent,
because
of what it would do to the entire system. Mel Kay, great to see you, as always.
See you guys.
Check out Mel's great show and her great book.
So my job is to do deep research, have incredible sources, massive historical understanding, and then just tell the truth and let the chips fall where they may. Justice be done, may the heavens fall. You can see the pragmatic angle from Trump. If they do start prosecuting all of these world leaders and financial leaders, business leaders, in a giant deep state child rape initiations cult, if all that comes out, what will the aftermath be? Well, the world will see the United States, the UK, and Europe. And that's how it operates, as pure, absolute, complete scum. And so Trump is now using the Epstein files that they have, and we know they have, the videos, all of it, the client list, all of it. Houses full. It would fill houses, FBI report. Just Sorrel Ranch. And it's come out in court. Where did it all go? Well, a bunch of it went to New York. And the Democrats were sitting on it, and the FBI head there. Remember, I dug in. We're at war with Trump. We're not giving them anything. We're not helping them. Remember the email? Don't work with them. Don't talk to them. They had to raid them. And then they got it. And there's photos from the FBI. That's out in New York. Hard drives, and boxes after boxes of hard drives, cabinet after cabinet of that. And then they come out and tell us it's all there. Art of the deal. Load the gun, put it to the deep state head, and then make a deal for the deep state to roll over and to hand the keys over to Trump. And is Trump going to dismantle it now? We're seeing a lot of signs of that. 96% reduction in the smuggling over the border, rolling up the networks doing it. I'm not defending any of this, by the way. I'm telling you what's going on. This is the thinking. But to make that deal, they had to say, okay, we'll go out and say there's nothing there so that we can't then use it against you later. Because the bad guys say, well, how do we know if we do this, you won't alter the deal later? We want you to join the conspiracy. We want you to become accomplices after the fact. We want you to get in the swamp with us and swim around and, by extension, join the cult. Or you could say it's a marriage. So, no, I understand that they didn't have people even willing to prosecute this, people even willing to watch the videos, see a couple, don't want to see any more. And there's a tendency when something's so horrible to cover it up, like the Catholic Church and the Boy Scouts and every other institution. They get a few pedophiles in via the Jesuits, and then it comes out, the parish covers it up, they send the priest somewhere else, they do it more, then they use that as blackmail, they get more of the cult in, and that's how this thing works. It's a disease. This is the nature of how the universe really works. And I have decided many years ago that the best thing I can do is just expose how it all works. Because they can try to hide this stuff and use it for blackmail and all the rest of it. But at the end of the day, the truth is now out. And there's nothing the globalists are going to be able to do to stop it. And the externalization of the drugging the kids, the surgeries, the normalization of this sick Satanism is being rolled back by Trump, is being rolled back by the grassroots. And I see Trump actually pragmatically believing he made the right decision here. I'm not defending it. I'm not endorsing it. I'm saying, because I can hold multiple concepts and thoughts and philosophies in my mind at one time, I can hold hundreds, doesn't mean I have the one I know is right. I have the one that the Holy Spirit tells me to follow. But I can also understand this. And I understand that I am attacking the corrupt satanic system from a completely different angle of total exposure. But in Trump's position of the country and trying to stabilize the world, he believes this is the right thing to do, and he's made the decision to take control of the blackmail material on Bill Gates and the rest of them. And that's why more and more you see them clicking their heels and kissing his ass at the NATO events and just groveling to him. Because Trump never met with globalists, never made deals, always was his own man. Love that. Was not in their club because he understood they'd try to control him. Instead, he got in at the top of the club and took it over. Now, the question is, will he dismantle it?
Taking it to the left like no one we've ever seen in our lifetimes, as long as he's faithful to the basic MAGA platform that I called sort of the deportation platform, right? They love him. They're perfectly happy. So I just use the term deportation wing as a symbol for those who support all the major issues of MAGA that Trump has delivered on in spades over the last nearly 6 months. But there is another part of this coalition, which I call the deep state part of the coalition. So you've got the deportation wing and you've got the deep state wing. And they are far more concerned about this parallel rogue government that has formed over the last several decades that exercises inordinate influence over the world's affairs, that is not accountable to voters, that is basically a rogue state. And Epstein represented not just sort of like, you know, a key manifestation of that rogue state, but also its Achilles heel. In that, by exposing this rogue state through the Epstein files, Trump had the capacity to finally destroy it. And as far as this crowd is concerned, if the deep state is not brought to heel, then all of this, everything we're experiencing right now in America's golden age, will ultimately have been for naught, because they are the ones who are ultimately in charge, not the people. So whether we like it or not, by failing to deliver for this side of the coalition, the Trump administration has caused a rift in the coalition. The deportation side remains very happy, but the deep state side is livid. And many are threatening to sit out of the upcoming midterms, which obviously would not be very good. What is good is that Trump is listening. He's hearing the concerns loud and clear. And it looks like he is effectively responding to heal this rift once and for all.
Lastly today, we'll play a clip from another recent episode of The Alex Jones Show, featuring an interview with former head of the Defense Intelligence Agency and advisor to President Trump, retired U.S. Army General Michael Flynn, who, as many of you know, was all but destroyed politically and bankrupted during the Russia collusion hoax inspired by the deep state to destroy Donald Trump and his supporters, including Flynn. In this clip, Flynn and Jones discuss recent revelations that implicate Obama administration intelligence agency heads John Brennan, James Clapper, and James Comey in major wrongdoing and possible treason related to their activities related to alleged U.S. election interference, both domestically and involving foreign governments. This is a developing story. Flynn and Jones and numerous others are calling for swift investigations and, if justified, indictments over these possibly treasonous operations.
What needs to be done here?
I would pull my team in, the close, trusted personal advisors he has, and he said, and I would say something along the lines of, look, we just crushed the Iranian nuclear program and set them back 10 years, let's say. I want this team to crush the deep state just like we just crushed the Iranian nuclear program. But I want the setback to be forever. So we have got to come up with some ideas right now to massively shut down, you know, agencies, organizations, maybe whole departments, get rid of a whole bunch of people. And we also have to, and I would be looking right at my attorney general and probably at the director of national intelligence and saying, you two work together. And I would direct both of those individuals to come to me with a plan, I'd give them maybe 72 hours. And I'd say, I want a plan for an investigation. And then I want to see some indictments and I want to see some people brought in for questioning right now. It's good versus evil. And we better know, we better understand right now that if we don't take the evidence, if we don't take the information that we are getting, and the American people are standing there like me right now, we're standing or we're sitting and we're saying, please, Mr. President, take action.
All right, General Flynn is our guest, and he's a former head of the Defense Intelligence Agency, former top national security advisor to President Trump, and current advisor, unofficially, of Trump. He is here to give us a threat assessment on the real current state of things and what he thinks is most important front and center. He's been with us for about 20 minutes, GeneralFlynn.com. So, General Michael Flynn, thank you so much for being here. You've got the floor.
Thanks so much for having me, Alex, and everything that you continue to do and report on. I mean, it's amazing how visionary you really are. So where are we? Where is the United States of America right now? And, you know, we have, I'm not sure if Hakeem Jeffries has shut up yet, but we'll have the big, beautiful bill, and that'll get signed off here by the President of the United States shortly. And that'll continue to move our economy in the direction that I think that Trump wants to move. And, you know, one of the big things this summer, of course, is the price of a gallon of gas, the price of a gallon of milk, the price of a dozen eggs. So all that matters to the American people. But what also matters to the American people, and I know this because I'm getting it in spades and I hear it because I pay very close attention to the various news conferences and press conferences that both Trump does, and as well as being done from the White House press room. And that's this issue of accountability. So yesterday, and I think it's, you know, I think you've reported on it, and it's floating around the internet right now, is this declassified document about Russiagate, right? I mean, I've known this. Everybody knows this. But now there's stark evidence. There you go. There is stark evidence. Brennan, Comey, Clapper, right? And these three, you know, stooges, these three hoodlums, these guys, the whole thing was made up. It was made up to help Hillary Clinton win. And in fact, part of that also says that actually Russia wanted Hillary Clinton to win. They actually favored her to win. So that document's out. There's another document that didn't get a lot of reporting, and that's the document by Senator Grassley. I think he released a couple of weeks ago about foreign interference in our elections, particularly precisely China, but China, Venezuela, Cuba, Russia, Iran, where the U.S. intelligence community was aware of all this during the 2020 election. So we've known that. So how much more do we know that the U.S. intelligence community is hiding from the American people? But this particular document that you're rifling through right there, Alex, is such a staggering display of criminal behavior by the most senior officials in the U.S. government under Barack Obama. Okay? And we now know, because during my case, we brought it out, you know, before my case was dismissed, we fought tooth and nail. Yeah, these are acts of treason. Exactly. So the I'll go back to this. The 5th of January of 2017 was a very, very famous meeting, which we now know we have all the evidence of, with probably, there's probably some redacted items that are still remaining, but we have enough evidence of the 5th of January 2017 meeting in the Oval Office run by Barack Obama and his soldiers, right? Those three, Comey, Clapper, and Brennan were three among a couple of others, Yates and Susan Rice were two others. And that's the meeting that they conspired to basically undermine a duly elected president of the United States. And the person that they talked about getting rid of first was yours truly. That was the 5th of January, 2017. The 6th of January, that particular report was presented, what that report is talking about. That report was presented to Donald J. Trump and his incoming national security team the very next day up at Trump Tower, 6th January, 2017. So here they are in the Oval Office on the 5th of January, and they are conspiring to basically undermine and overthrow the presidency of the United States of America. And then the 6th of January was the day that they then met to lie to the incoming administration, particularly to President Trump, about a whole series of things. And those series of things are highlighted in that this particular.
All right, General Flynn, stay there. You will continue to have the floor. But the takeaway here is, you're absolutely right. General Flynn is saying we need immediate Justice Department action for treason, total proof with the exhibits of the coup against America.
That's all for another show today. As always, we hope you found today's content of interest and value. You can watch and or listen to a podcast of today's show when it's posted shortly here on the Jim Benson Show pages at bbsradio.com/The Jim Benson Show. And elsewhere on the internet, including x.com at jamesb5030-91977. And on rumble.com and Apple Podcasts. While you're at it, if you visit my pages here at bbsradio.com/The Jim Benson Show, scroll down on my index page there, the first page, and check out our related videos section. Look for us again 2 weeks from today, the same time slot, with another episode of the show. Have a great rest of your day and evening.